are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is unfortunately not here. Out Now is a film podcast with Abe and I normally discussing new movies weekly. However, every now and then we like to have these special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks or something completely different. This is one of our fun commentary tracks. It's our monthly commentary track, and in honor of the upcoming film Rocky 7, a.k.a. Adrian's Revenge, a.k.a. Rocky colon Creed, a.k.a. Creed, we are going to be talking about one of the cult favorites in the Rocky franchise, Rocky 4.
The greatest movie ever made.
It is a movie, that is for sure. And yeah, we're going to be doing a Rocky 4 commentary track. We just we jump straight to the Cold War because it's more relevant than ever. That's what no one will say. And joining me to discuss Rocky 4, of all the Rocky movies, we have in this corner from Why So Blue and the Cult Cinema Cavalcade podcast, wearing the extra plaid boxing trunks, the horror hound from Naptown, it's Brandon Peters.
Boo!
Wow. That's intro music.
Good evening, Aaron.
Good evening. And in the other corner, from Forbes, sporting the Hawaiian print boxing trunks, the box office analyzer, and the family man terrorizer, it's Scott Mendelson.
Woo! I have no introductory music. I didn't plan ahead.
Getting this podcast started. We are ready for this one, guys. Okay. So here we are. We're going to be talking about Rocky IV. That is the plan for this commentary track. For you guys listening at home and watching the movie at the same time and have not done this before, basically Scott, Brandon, and I all have the film timed in at a certain time. In this case, we have it at 6 seconds on the Blu-ray edition, but that's basically after the lion in the MGM logo roars.
Four more seconds to get up.
Yeah. And so we have it all paused there, and I'm going to count down from three. And on the sound of go, we're going to press play and start talking about the movie. For everyone not listening to or not watching the movie at the same time, feel free to just keep listening. So there you go. It's pretty straightforward. And we're just going to get this going. We're going to talk about Rocky IV. So you guys ready?
We're ready.
I will break you.
Touch gloves.
Pain. All right. I'm going to count down here. 3, 2, 1.
That's a knockout. Match over.
All right. Okay. So I guess since we're... Well, really, we should be, you know, getting ready to sing along to the film. But
I got the lyrics up.
You got the lyrics up. I believe Eye of the Tiger.
You need the lyrics?
Does Eye of the Tiger start?
Yeah, that's what starts it. Of course, like all the Rocky sequels, this one starts with, well, except for Rocky Balboa, I don't remember how that one starts.
It does not have a recap, no.
Yeah, well, the other ones all have a recap.
Well, this is in the early days, like before, like VHS was a huge thing, home video, because they'd have to recap for people because they didn't expect them to have watched them a bunch.
And the nature of recapping means playing the final fight without any context whatsoever.
Right.
Exactly.
Notice when these gloves touch, by the way, the Russian glove blows up while the American glove manages to stay intact.
Stay strong.
Yeah. So previously on Rocky, Clubber Lang, played by Mr. T, was beating up Rocky, and then Rocky finally got himself up to speed and said, you know what? I'm tired of this asshole, and I'm going to beat him down. I'm pretty sure, like, we'll get to our thoughts on the Rocky series in a second here, but I'm pretty sure the Clubber Lang fight, for me, is probably the most satisfying of fights when it comes to Rocky beating somebody. He's just such a dick the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Like,
finally, knock this guy out.
Rocky III was, of course, later remade as Southpaw. But before that, it was remade as The Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, it was a mix of Rocky III and The World Is Not Enough, the Bond film.
Right. With Transformers Dark of the Moon thrown in for good measure.
Of course, yeah. But, okay, so quick thoughts here. Scott Mendelson, what are your thoughts on the Rocky series in general? Like, what are your thoughts on those?
Well, Rocky IV is the movie that, believe it or not, made me a movie nerd.
Really?
Yeah. Wasn't Star Wars. I love Star Wars. Obviously, this was, you know, 4 years before Batman. For some weird reason, I gravitated toward the imagery of the Rocky IV poster. It was probably the American flag boxer shorts. This wasn't nationalistic or patriotic or anything. I liked the colors of the shorts. I liked the flag draped over them in the poster. So for some reason, as a 5-year-old going on 6, I wanted to see Rocky IV.
I want to imagine young 5-year-old going on 6 Scott Mendelson right there, just mop of hair, sitting there with his American flag, watching Rocky IV by the campfire.
I don't know why there'd be a campfire. That'd be weird with a TV.
No, no, we didn't have campfires. But no, it's I first got into movies by from the poster art. Every Friday, you'd open your local newspaper, and right. they would have giant poster art. And I liked that. And of course, this was the olden days where the reviews of the new movies would be published on Friday on opening day. This was obviously before the internet, before embargoes or anything like that. So of course, I saw Rocky IV as a 5-year old. I very much enjoyed it. And
had you seen the other Rocky films?
No, I had not. And then of course, I went back and I saw the previous three.
Well, at least they had a good recap at the beginning here.
Yes. And when I was 5, this whole ding, ding, ding was the funniest thing I had ever seen. And I mean, we'll talk more about my weird obsession with this film and how it influenced my budding film fandom. But
I love learning this, by the way. Like, you suggested Rocky IV just because, like, I thought because Creed was coming out and because it made so much sense. But now there's, like, this whole backstory to your obsession with Rocky IV that's made me way more excited to do the rest of this commentary track.
Well, no, I was a hardcore Rocky fan when I was, like, 5 going on 6 or whatever. I had this Rocky stuffed doll.
Well, yeah,
I don't
like,
I think I'm the only person on Earth that ever bought this thing.
When we were, like, little, Scott, I mean, Rocky felt like a real person. Like, yeah. He felt like he was a real sports hero, real boxer. Like, if you would have asked me when I was a kid who my favorite boxer was, it would have been Rocky. He felt so real. They had, like, the Philadelphia, the statue of him. Like, there was the movies. It just, he felt like an actual, like, real personality.
That's why Rocky endures and why he's so endearing, because he feels real. Like, as much as over the top as some of these movies are.
Wow! Nice one.
We're about to
meet
a robot, by the way.
Some of these movies are. There is like something very endearing about the Rocky character, which is incredible, just given that it's Sylvester Stallone, who many wouldn't think necessarily has like the chops to play someone that kind of warm your heart and be compelling as a character if they don't think too closely about the Rocky films and they just focus on some of his more action heavy stuff. But he really is. He's an iconic figure.
Okay. Well, and this is, you know, this year, 85, with Rambo, First Blood Part 2, and Rocky 4, is sort of where he crossed the line from being, you know, regular actor who occasionally fights people to being just this iconic, almost larger-than-life action icon.
Speaking of larger-than-life action icons, here comes the robot.
Yes, here comes the robot. But it's weird, because even as a kid, I liked the movie, I saw it many times. But it's not like I really, related to Rocky or got into the jingoistic aspects of this film or, gave a darn that it was, America versus Russia. Just for some reason, I liked this movie because I was too young to really respond to anything other than the imagery. And I liked the music. I mean, the film is practically a musical. We'll get to that later. And I liked the Ivan Drago character. I liked the silly, goofy humor involving Pauly and the robot. And I can't explain it because it doesn't make any sense. But this is the movie that really started getting me into liking movies as an art form. It wasn't the first movie I saw in the theater. That was The Muppets Take Manhattan about a year and a half earlier. But for some weird reason that to this day I do not understand, this is the film that got me into movies.
Well, I feel proud to be involved in getting you to do a commentary track for one of your childhood favorite movies.
I told Aaron today that I was like, when he said, when he said Rocky IV, I was like, and that Scott was going to be on here, I'm like, oh, Scott's number one movie of all time. And Aaron was like, like a View to a Kill. I was like, no, I think actually at one point in his life, it was his number one. I think Aaron thought I was like lying.
I didn't know how to take this news.
Well, when I suggested it, honestly, I wasn't, it's just, it's Creed. Rocky IV is a lot of fun. It's the shortest of the series, so why not?
Yeah. With that, before I get to you, Scott, your thoughts on the other films real quick?
Well, I love the first one, obviously, the same reason everybody else does. I like the second one a lot. I think it works as a drama. I think it's a fair and just sequel that logically continues the story. And frankly, I think it's a metaphor for where his career was at that point. Where
all of them are.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
were that, you know, he had done Rocky, and then he had two big flops afterwards, and he kind of had returned to the Rocky franchise in order to get his box office luster back. And this is something that, you know, this is going to be my post for tomorrow morning. The idea for a lot of his career, Sylvester Stallone was weirdly franchise dependent, where he was almost worthless except as a box office draw, except in his Rocky and Rambo franchises.
You mean Oscar wasn't a box office smash?
I liked the movie, but it was not.
Okay.
Cliffhanger.
There was this 4-year spot from Cliffhanger to Copland where that was the exception to the rule. But even there, you know, Cliffhanger was a huge hit. Demolition Man was a solid hit, but it was really expensive. Mm-hmm. I mean, no one thought of it as a flop at all because, you know, Stallone was still in his comeback phase. But, you know, let me put it this way. It made about the same amount as Last Action Hero, costing about the same. It's just that Stallone and Schwarzenegger were in very different places in their career at that point. But then, you know, a year later, you've got The Specialist, which was a hit, but nobody liked it. Daylight, which was a bomb in America and overseas. Assassins, same thing.
Judge Dredd somewhere.
Which was a flop everywhere.
Yep.
And then by the time you get to Copland, you know, basically, that was supposed to be the, hey, look, I can act again movie. And after that, it's over. It's over until Rocky Balboa. He has a 9-year drought of just flops.
Well, he was straight to video, too.
Yeah.
Two of them, yes, went straight to video.
Oh, God, Get Carter and Driven. That was a terrible double bill.
Yes.
We got to stop real quick because I like Apollo playing around with his dogs in the pool of tennis balls. That just makes me laugh for some reason. It's like watching TV, just hanging out. That's how.
Well, he's watching Dolph, Brigitte Nielsen, and Dr. Loomis' rival, Dr. Hoffman, on television.
But no, and I'm not a huge fan of the third one. I think it tries to be a lot, feel very fantastical like this one. But without getting too navel-gazy here, even as a kid, the racial, social, political, you know, subtext of the film bothered me. Even as like a 10-year-old that didn't know better.
Well, Paul lays it up pretty thick when he goes to L.A. and he's like, I don't like this. And it's just like a gym full of black people. And it's like, what?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, or the idea of, you know, Clubber Lang being, you know, very sexually threatening, like, uh-oh, this is big, scary black man that wants to rape my wife, and that's why he's evil. Again, I wasn't old enough to know why that was bothersome, but that bothered me. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, frankly, why didn't Clubber Lang deserve to be a champion? He did all the hard work that Rocky wouldn't do. Rocky was not entitled to be a champion just because we liked him in the first couple films. Because
Rocky's also a decent human being, where Clubber Lang, as good as he is as a fighter, he's also a jerk. Like, he really is.
Yeah. It played into what I call the Why Oliver syndrome, where you have, you know, a movie like this or Oliver Twist, where it's like, okay, great that Oliver Twist got his happy ending. What about all the other orphans? You know, it's why is Oliver better than they are? And again, this is me critiquing a film as a 10-year-old. And Rocky V, I admire the heck out of what it's trying to do, but it just doesn't work. There's stuff in there I like. The flashback with Mickey is awesome. The end of the film is just ridiculous. Where he basically, after an entire film of saying, you know, you can't fight for money because you're broke, he then fights for free.
My ring's outside.
So somehow it became a street, but like there's a line about him being a street fighter. He's like, you've never been a street fighter ever.
No.
Like that's never been a thing for you. Yeah. Not once.
You were a street thug.
You were not even a good thug. You wouldn't even fight people as a thug. Okay, Brandon, your thoughts on the Rocky series.
It's one of my favorite series. I've always had an affection for it. I love the character of Rocky. I grew up, you know, when it was at the height, its peak. The first film is just a masterpiece. It's really moving, powerful. It started a movement of getting out of the gritty downer 70s films. They started getting a little bit more optimistic after Rocky, because like the next year you had something like, you went from Rocky to like Star Wars to Superman, and things started coming out of the gloom. Not that I don't like, I think the 70s is one of the best decades of film ever, but you could see things getting a little bit more optimistic with Rocky and its Best Picture win. And it's just an overall great film. You can't watch that film and just not feel great and emotionally moved and stuff. I think it might be maybe a guy thing with that movie. I don't know. I think Rocky II is very good, underappreciated. It's almost, you're watching it and you're like, man, this is like almost as good as the first, but there's just something off, and I think it's maybe the direction, because Stallone is at the helm, so there's just a little less restraint. Rocky III.
By the way, Dolph Lundgren just punched something that is conceivably so hard that it could probably take somebody's head off, but that doesn't actually happen in this movie.
Rocky III, I'm fine with. With me, age, I'm just like, it's there. This one's ridiculous and just, it's quick, it's silly, it's fun. Five, good idea. It's got it in the right spot, but things just don't work with it. And Rocky Balboa, I'm biased because I was an extra in Rocky Balboa.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how big a fan I am. I was like, even if I'm just sitting in that boxing ring watching stuff, I got to be there. So I was in Vegas and did it. And I have to say, one of the craziest moments, like we were talking about how larger than life Stallone is. I mean, when he came out to start shooting and directing, it was just, I mean, the crowd was just in, like, everybody was in awe, just immediately just like a zombie rose to their feet. And he's just, I mean, a larger than life personality.
I need to stop like, you right now because Carl Weather or Apollo Creed is like the only one that seems to realize how ridiculous this robot is. like and the way he addresses, like, what is that? And then he immediately goes back to the conversation he was having.
He's like, is Paulie sleeping with that thing?
Meanwhile, Stallone or Rocky's so like, he's like, oh, you tell it to talk that way. It's like that's the reaction you have. Like he's probably screwing this robot right now. And your thought is you taught it to have a different voice. Like,
I love Rocky. It's always great to revisit these characters. I mean, Paulie, Adrian, Apollo Creed, Mickey, everybody is just. You know, it's like this family. Like in each movie is like that family member. It's still Rocky. Even Rocky V, it's not a great movie, but you can still sit through it because you at least got your characters there. And I've just really always enjoyed these movies. Which, you know, it's funny, in the '80s you had like, you know, the Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween's racking up the sequel numbers, and Rocky about a boxer.
Yeah, I mean it was a sequel-friendly franchise back when those things generally didn't exist, except for, you know, horror films, arguably.
Bond.
I mean, other than Bond. Bond sort of did its own little...
I guess, well, Star Trek was... Star Trek was racking them in the 80s, too, but...
Yeah. But... Oh, Rocky was first.
Scott, your thoughts on Balboa, by the way?
The Rocky Balboa?
Yeah.
Well, how about this? It was good enough that during the fight scene, I forgot to look for Brandon.
I still can't find myself.
No, I saw it, you know, opening morning, wasn't expecting much, whatever. I was shocked at how into it I was. And I don't know whether it's nostalgia. I don't know. It's a good movie. The first 20 minutes the first 20 minutes are interesting because you're like, you're choking on callbacks. And then Paulie comes around and basically says everything that the audience is thinking. He's like, you gotta, you know, this is terrible. You're killing yourself. You got to let go of this stuff. And that's where the movie gets very good. I think Burt Young is fantastic in the picture.
There's a line that crushes me, and it crushes Rocky too, where he says, you're still mad Adrian left you. And Rocky's response is, she didn't leave me. She died. And it's just like, this is Sylvester Stallone acting. And I really like it. I like seeing him doing this. Like and to get to my thoughts on the Rocky series, I really like Rocky, Rocky II, and Rocky Balboa for the fact that Sylvester Stallone is acting. Like, he's doing a great job as a performer, as someone that, in addition to being a physical specimen, he's also very good at emoting and doing what he needs to do. There's some terrific scenes in Rocky, which goes without saying, but, like, of just him doing things that feel so naturalistic and so, like, off the cuff and real that it's just, it's surprising to see, like, where he's gone from there and how he's not like more of a respected actor. But of course,
people with Rocky, they thought he was like the next De Niro.
Brando. It's like on a Brando.
Brando, they thought this guy. I mean, they thought Stallone was going to be this. I mean, he became larger than life, but not the way they expected. They thought he was going to be some fine actor, but the guy came to blockbusters.
Well, and you know, it wasn't until. you know, he'd made First Blood. That was his first, well, Nighthawks was his first action, hard action picture. But even that, he was a very soft-spoken, you know, one of the things I like about Nighthawks is that it's a cop movie, but a cop that doesn't want to break the rules. That desperately doesn't want to break the rules to enforce the law.
As opposed to being the Cure in Cobra.
Yeah, opposed to Cobra, yeah. No, those are fascinating double bill if I ever have the time.
I love Nighthawks and Cobra.
Yeah. I mean, Cobra's a piece of garbage, but I enjoy it for the same reason.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of it's defining 80s cop movie.
Is Nighthawks on Blu-ray?
In Germany.
Oh.
I'm not even sure it's on...
I gotta wait.
...widescreen DVD.
Okay.
I had a full-screen version for years because I couldn't find anything else.
Yeah, you mentioned First Blood. I hadn't seen First Blood for like the longest time because I always kind of thought it was a Rambo movie, as opposed to being its own movie, which we've talked about in the past on this podcast of like movies that were like the first entry was like a movie, and then the second one that like started like Lethal Weapon's a great example, or Lethal Weapon's like feels like a real movie. Lethal Weapon 2 is kind of the movie that which I like all those movies actually, but they became something else in the sequels and beyond.
Well, you know, Final Destination or the Ice Age films.
Yeah.
You know, the Ice Age cartoon, that's a real, that's a depressing movie about death. The sequels are not. Mm-hmm.
And with First Blood, the First Blood isn't, like, I wouldn't say it's as good as Rocky, but it's a good, like, it's a good performance from Stallone, who plays a very tragic character that happens to get caught up in...
And
some other stuff.
He goes full on Travolta during his monologue at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's a very good movie, mm-hmm. and I think you know it's interesting because on the commentary, the author of the book argues that it's basically one of the first modern action movies, in that once it gets going, it's basically nonstop action for about 75 minutes, mm-hmm. and he's right. You know, with the exception of a quick scene where Brian Dennehy and Richard Corina chit-chat about Rambo, it's pretty much boom from the beginning to end.
And it's a movie that I think because in hindsight, when people go to it now, it catches them by surprise with how like good it is and how it's not...
No, at all.
There's only like, what, is there one death in that
one
movie?
Death by accident.
One death. By accident. Yep. Like,
And now in the novel, he kills like the entire town.
Yes.
But you know, they knew they couldn't really do that.
James Cameron had a say in that for the sequel.
Well, even the sequel, I mean, I've talked about this a lot. I think the Rambo movies are a lot more complicated than they're given credit for. Politically, socially, whatever. I mean, even the second one, he doesn't kill anybody for the first 37 minutes of a 90-minute movie. It's not to the last 10 minutes or so that he goes quote unquote Rambo. That is just an old school action drama where in the last 10 minutes it goes crazy.
We should get back to Rocky because we're about to see this
to be like, living in America.
We have this very elaborate opening sequence, which is one of the like basically a musical number here where you have James Brown performs an entire song in this movie.
Gotta fill that time somewhere.
Yeah.
And one of the issues I've always had with this movie, even as a kid, I've never responded to the whole, I've got to do something stupid and reckless just because. And that's really the whole, you know, Apollo's whole motivation here, and eventually Rocky's whole motivation. And, you know, it movies like Everest or, you know, Southpaw, for example. I don't mean to pick on Southpaw again. But the entire crux of the movie is that at a key moment, Jake Gyllenhaal can't back down and something horrible happens as a result. And maybe it's because I never grew up with any kind of, you know, financial want. I always had a certain level of middle-class comfort, but I've never responded to stories about people that are doing pretty well in their life, but have to do something, you know, physically or emotionally dumb just to challenge themselves.
Well, to Rocky's credit, he did kill his best friend. And he's challenging him the one way. He's not like he's going out to shoot him, which Jake Gyllenhaal almost kind of does in Southpaw to an extent.
Yes.
He does challenge him to, in the same way that the Step Up movies are based around people dancing each other as battles. Rocky does the thing he knows how to do, which is box. But yeah, Apollo Creed.
Yeah, he's
not. This movie's only 90 minutes, so I guess we don't get that half an hour that tells us how much of a patriot Apollo Creed is and why he feels it's a necessity for him to beat Russia.
Yes. And to the extent that it matters, not much. You know, I even as a kid, he was an idiot. You know, it's like, you're an idiot. Don't fight him. You're being an idiot.
This is just supposed to be a friendly exhibition.
Yeah. And you can even see, because Apollo Creed is all about bravado, and you can even see from the second he touches gloves with him, he knows he's made a mistake. Like, yes. Which I really enjoy.
Oh, absolutely.
But the thing with Apollo Creed, you know, he lived his life in the spotlight, and he had that taken away for so long, and he's finally can have a sense of having it back. I mean, he's wanting to get back to where that was, even though...
Yeah, he did lose something from Rocky, from his best friend, essentially taking away his title. And then his own pride getting in the way of making that difficult.
Bechdel rule broken.
There you go.
Bechdel test pass, whatever you want to call it.
I have a question. Did Stallone have something like a fear or thought about robots in the 80s?
So
with this movie and Cobra... They have robot sequences?
There's two things. One is that there's a rumor, not a rumor, but like one thing is that he saw a robot at a party and thought it was fun, so he put it in the movie. The other thing that I've heard, which is more compelling, is that a robotic device helped treat his autistic son, which is why he decided to put the robot in the movie.
Okay.
Interesting.
Which I could kind of I could envision that being more plausible.
Is that his son that was in the fifth one or a different son?
One of his sons in the second one, and his other son is Sage, still who passed away, is in the fifth one.
Interesting.
He has like five kids, so yeah, he's good.
Sage, who founded Grindhouse Releasing, which is a really cool underground label.
Of course, we're getting to the first musical number, 24 minutes in the movie, which of course is James Brown Living in America. And of course, as a 5-year-old, this is my first introduction to James Brown.
It's a good scene. It's a good one. I like Dolph Lundgren. Like, Dolph Lundgren doesn't really have much to do here besides, you know, fight, obviously. So I do like his his kind of flabbergastedness to, like, everything going on.
Yeah, he's very bemused by this.
Yeah, it's like, what's happening?
Him and Brigitte have never left the house till now.
You mean Brigitte and her husband.
Yes.
As she calls him.
And I love, like, Talia Shire gets better looking with each Rocky movie.
Yeah, I noticed all of these this past week, and yeah, it's like, she's so frumpy in the first one. She kind of gets, like, something done in the second. Then she has, like, a new hairdo in every other movie after that.
Well, the same thing with Rocky. You know, from the first two, he's arguably a blue-collar guy, but then by the third film on, he can afford to take care of himself and do proper hygiene and all that.
The third one, he's noticeable. He's cut in that one. Like, he's really leanest he's ever been in that one, I believe. He has, like, the lowest percentage body fat he's ever had in that one. Like, he's crazy. And, you know, all that workout montage in the third one, it makes sense. And then this one's kind of, it's pretty much the same. Something that's neat about the fifth one, which I agree is not a great movie. I think it has ideas that just are executed poorly, but... He kind of, like, everything he's doing in there, which I think it comes back to him being a lot like he was in the first two. He's wearing the jacket and the hat again, and he's even his speech patterns are more in line with those two, where these three and four, he's seemingly smarter than he seemed to be in the first two movies.
Well, I think Rocky always works best as the, like, kind of bumbling street prophet.
I agree.
Where he's a guy that, you know, he's not very bright, but he loves to give advice. And he knows he's not the smartest guy, but he thinks he always wants to help. And I mean, it's evident from the scene with him and Marie in the first one. That's who Rocky is. That's, you know, perfect. And he's got a lot of good scenes with Joe Spinell in the first one too. And that just giving depth to who he is. And whenever they return to that, I mean, Rocky 3 and 4, he's definitely not that. He's a different version of that guy that's confident and, you know, backing up his advice.
Yeah, he's still Rocky. I wouldn't say he's not Rocky anymore, but yeah, it is. Yeah. He's noticeably different in those movies than he.
Yeah.
Maybe because he's not on the streets in those movies. He's in his big house or whatnot.
Yeah, but I mean, he returns to, like, his stuff with with, you know, Rocky Jr. in Rocky V, and then, like, with his son played by
Milo Ventimiglia
in the, you know, Rocky Balboa gets back to that Rocky 1 and 2 stuff.
Which leads to another great monologue in that movie. I love that scene. Oh, yeah. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows.
That's right, just, yes.
It's a good speech he gives.
Oh, it's very good. Like, you know, you can tell with Rocky Balboa. I mean, Stallone, we got... he was a writer.
He did, yeah. He wrote all of these.
Yeah, and it's crazy. Like, that's a strength of his, is that he's a pretty good writer, and you can sense with Balboa, it's like he took every bit of care. Like, you know, I have to get this right. You know, this has to be good, and it's really well written. He's got great speeches.
He's one of the few people that have been nominated for both an acting and writing award in the same year.
Yep, along with Orson Welles, Charlie Chaplin.
And Woody Allen.
And I'm sure somebody else in the last 30 years.
Woody Allen, yeah.
It's a small picture, but I think his screenplay for Homefront is actually pretty good.
The Jason Statham film
from a couple years back.
We all liked Homefront.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was super looking forward to it. It delivered immensely for me.
Yeah.
Really thoughtful script with every character. It's outstanding. Yeah.
A few others, by the way, the nominated thing. Warren Beatty, Billy Bob Thornton, and Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. I was thinking Matt Damon.
Yes.
Roberto Benigni.
Yeah. No comment.
Damn. That guy.
Here's the Apollo Creed realization right here. It's just great. All of that bravado just immediately goes down right.
Oh, he's right there when he winks at him. He knows he's faking
it. But then he touches the gloves. And that you can see right there in his face. It's like, oh man, this is not going to go well.
Yeah, rocket scientist Dolph Lundgren's first major role.
Yep.
Which is funny because, like, yeah, he, like, Stallone is more than meets the eye. Because with Dolph Lundgren, if you just looked at him by his movies, oh, big meathead action guy from, you know, another country. But you know, he's probably the most brilliant guy in the film.
Yeah.
It's immense. If I recall. Was it this the one where Dolph Lundgren punched Stallone so hard he needed hospitalization for several weeks?
Yes, when shooting the film, Stallone decided that he wanted to hit Dolph. They should hit each other for real to increase the intensity.
Good job.
Rocky took 3 shots to the ribs, felt a burning in his chest, and realized his blood pressure was crazy high. Had to go to the emergency room. Had to be flown to all the way back from I think they were shooting in Canada, all the way back to L.A. where he was in intensive care. So. Yeah, it bruised his heart, essentially.
I found it funny that, you know, with Ivan Drago, Dolph Lundgren's character, he plays a character that you just despise in this movie. He's villainous. He's evil. He kills Apollo Creed. He has no remorse. He's cold. And somebody said, let's make him He-Man.
Well, I think
kids are gonna love the guy who killed Apollo Creed and fought Rocky.
I don't hate Dolph Lundgren.
No, I
don't know. I don't hate Dolph Lundgren, but I'm just thinking the thought process behind for you know his next role, kids hero, was.
Well, I mean, again, for what it's worth, even as a 6-year-old, 5-year-old, I didn't hate Ivan Drago, but he's a boxer.
He did his job.
Some, you know, these things happen.
I think the film
goes out of its way. To perhaps demonize Cold War Soviet Union, but not demonize the Russians.
Right.
And I think that's sort of, you know, people joke about this movie helping to end the Cold War or whatever. And, you know, obviously that's being funny.
Well, it's true. I mean, the Cold War did end, Scott, after Rocky IV. So, I mean,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, Stallone had a pretty good year. You know, he won Vietnam in May of 1985. And then he won the Cold War in November of 1985.
Yeah, that's in the history books. I know.
but anyway, you know, even as a 6-year-old, when I heard Ivan, you know, Dolph Lundgren was He-Man, like, oh, that's perfect casting. I love that.
Yeah, he got to go from this to what was supposed to be the next Star Wars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't, but that's...
And obviously it was. All those sequels, right?
Yep.
Dolph Lundgren, or his character...
Beastmaster even got sequels.
Oh, Beastmaster, Jesus Christ. But I mean, Brigitte Nielsen and what's his name? The guy that's Dr. Loomis's rival. Like, those are the enemies in this movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones that I just don't like at all. Like, Dolph Lundgren, he doesn't. Yeah. He's just there to fight. He does his job.
So you're saying if he dies, he dies? Oh, yeah, Dolph. Yeah.
That's his programming from his wife. That said, it's Stallone's. Stallone, he's given interviews about what he thought would happen to most of the people following like the events of Rocky films, just because he loves these characters so much. In his description of Rocky IV by Ivan Drago, he says, "Ivan Drago returned home in disgrace and became addicted to alcohol and steroids before committing suicide."
That's sad.
Since Stallone wrote all these, that's canon. So there you go. Tommy Gunn became a disgraced wrestler. I'm trying to remember what happened in Rocky 3. What he thought happened to Clubber Lang. I can also tell you what Rocky thinks, or what Stallone thinks of each Rocky film, because he rated them.
Oh.
I'll give you a second on that one. Talk about Apollo Creed's weird twitch on the floor, that's really sad and realistic. While he looked this up.
This is a wonderfully edited scene.
It is.
I mean, as sensationalistic as it is, it's supposed to be.
It's dramatic.
I mean, I've always loved the towel bit.
That twitch right there is haunting.
Oh,
like, oh, that's that's almost as bad as him losing his arm to the Predator.
It's like when you see a football player have a concussion on the field and they're like down and they twitch like this. Like, oh my gosh.
This is the scene where Apollo's wife morphs into Felicia Rashad. That's my Creed joke.
I tried to look her up, the actual actress. Apparently she like disappeared. And I'm sure they would have brought her back if they could.
According to Stallone, Clubber Lang later became a born-again Christian and a ringside announcer.
Ah!
So there you go. There's the fictional history of each of the Rocky quote-unquote villains.
He was supposed to return for Rocky Balboa.
I think he's supposed to return for this one also at some point.
Well, yeah, he was supposed to be in the... But they ended up using Mike Tyson instead.
Ah, oh, that makes sense. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And you know what? The two things that can set someone off in a Rocky series, mm-hmm. you know, don't ever call someone a bum
mm-hmm.
or a paper champion. Those are
those
are the two biggest offenders.
Rocky's ratings for these movies, by the way, Rocky is a 10, Rocky 2 is a 7, Rocky 3 is a 9, Rocky 4 is a 7.5, and Rocky 5 is a 0.
Ooh,
what about
harsh.
Balboa?
I'm going to find that right now, actually. But I think he gave those ratings before he made Balboa.
Oh, okay.
Let me see.
Rocky 3 at 9.
He really loved Rocky 3. He loved doing. I think he loved being in shape for it. I think Rocky 5. He knew he was not happy with how it turned out. Like he was legit upset with the results, and his heart wasn't in it. He called himself greedy. So he's very honest about these movies, which I admire.
I mean, that's one thing with, like, yeah, Stallone, I mean, he knows film. Like, I don't think people give him credit for that. Like,
which is part of why I was disappointed with The Expendables, because as much as I may not be a fan of, was it John Rambo? Is that what it's called, or just Rambo?
Yes, Rambo.
The director's cut is called John Rambo, the theatrical.
As much as I'm not a fan of that movie, I do think his direction is solid, and especially as an action film. So, like, The Expendables came along. And I didn't like it as an action movie. Like, I don't think his direction was, like, top-notch there. Like, with all the digital effects and whatnot, the digital blood and the shoddy editing, I was like, Rambo did a good job of showing me what the action looked like, where that movie was, like, all over the place.
Yeah.
I like The Expendables more than you do.
I think you like it for the story more, though.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's an interesting commentary. I mean, it's there's rich subtext there. If Rambo was sort of an apology for the xenophobia or nationalism or the "gee, war is easy," you know, whatever of the Rambo sequels, at least how they were taken in the popular culture, Expendables was sort of a no, America can still be the good guy as long as we act like the good guys. And, you know, there's a very, you know, they go out of their way to make the villains evil Americans. They go out of the way to make the villains the one to do the torturing. The villains, the one, you know, the American bad guys who do the torturing, while the good guys, and yeah, they're not all technically American, but most of them are, you know, they are basically doing what is right in the right way.
Which I think celebrates the idea that Stallone is a smart guy, as we've said here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't write and direct a bunch of movies because you want to and you, like, maybe can do it. He knows what he's doing. Like, he's directed enough movies and he's competent enough and he's proven himself to be a pretty good actor. Like, he's not dumb. Like, regardless of how dumb some of his movies might be, he knows what he's doing for the most part. So I can enjoy that that subtext is there, Scott, or that there's things like that there. I admire that aspect. It's just going into The Expendables, suffice to say, I just didn't really need it. Like, I was kind of looking forward to just seeing all of these guys together. But with that said, that's what Expendables 2 was, and it wasn't very good either. So I mean, I don't know what the balance is there. But,
I think the thing with the first, you know, Expendables, it wasn't what we were wanting. It was like, well, I got this much, because you wanted more Arnold, you wanted more Bruce Willis, you wanted some of the other guys in there, but he comes up and he's like, you know, your childhood heroes like Randy Couture.
You're right. It was who, you know, the promise was always, you know, action movie all stars to the rescue, and they basically got Stallone, Statham.
It was supposed to be Planet Hollywood the movie, and he couldn't get that to happen for the first one, but he just went ahead anyway instead of waiting.
And it became this like Jason Statham Stallone two man show for
for
most of the film before they all got together.
I think if you combine the story of the first film with the action and the cast of the second film, you would have a pretty damn good Expendables picture.
I completely agree.
I enjoyed the second film. It still wasn't what I was, you know, hoping for. It was closer to. It had some surprising moments, but I thought it looked better, felt better. I enjoyed it more. The first one, I don't know. It was just kind of there for me.
Yeah. They're all better than the third one.
Yeah, the third is just a wash.
So hopefully, in Expendables 4, where the Cold War is won again, we can only hope that everything works out.
And honestly, it's not even because of the PG-13. I mean, I think that personifies just how disposable, expendable it is. But there's just no there. And part of it is, you know, it's the text of the Expendables 3, we're all too old for this, we need to retire, yada, yada. That was the subtext of the first film. And because it was somewhat under the surface, it was a lot more poignant. We are now basically almost halfway through this film.
Yep. We got the montage, the hearts. Or no, we're not there yet.
No, it's about to go full musical in about two minutes.
I guess you would. I mean, you guys saw Scott. You saw it in theater. You saw it.
Yes.
You were young when you first saw it, so I guess I can't really ask you what was it like leading up to this film. But I'm curious what like an audience seeing Rocky IV thought they were in for. If they knew Apollo Creed was going to die, or if like that was a big twist in the story.
No, it was known. I knew going into the movie.
As a 5-year-old, you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know why I should care, but I knew the plot was that Rocky's friend, who happens to be named Apollo Creed, is killed by this giant Russian fighter.
I had a good story of the first Rocky. There was a guy that Scott and I worked with back then. He was an editor, freelance editor or whatever. He was an old time, been around, but he was talking about one of his, you know, greatest theatrical experiences was when he saw Rocky. I forget what theater he said he saw that, but he said during the final boxing scene, everybody in the theater was standing and cheering. Huh. Like it was like a real event. And he said he'd never seen anything like it since. And I'm like, yeah, that's that's pretty crazy.
That would
everybody
be crazy.
Was
I would
standing
admire that.
And like, wow.
I'd stand with them if everyone started.
Oh, yeah. No, I'd be with it too. That people were just cheering and, you know, as if it was a real thing.
One of my gripes with this movie is that it doesn't have a Bill Conti score, and I do like I like the score in this movie mainly because I like the Transformers the movie, the animated movie, and it's the same guy. Was it a Vincent? Vincent DiCola. It's fine for what it is, but Bill Conti's score in these movies, which is every one of them except this one, it really gets me into it. Like it really gets me going. And Rocky and Rocky II in particular, the combination of the score and just kind of the build up you have of watching the character go through what he's going through and to finally get to the end of the film, regardless if he wins or loses, it just makes you really emotional. And I can completely understand why you'd be standing up in the middle of a theater what this whole musical sequence is about to start. That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah.
But it's
driving.
There's a lot of emotional resonance in those movies, and the score is a huge part of it for sure.
Hold on, where are we?
That said, Rocky and Rocky II, it's not inexplicable. I know why. They make me tear up, these movies, at the very end when you get to the point of like what's happening. And it's largely because of these characters, which is another credit to Stallone. Like one of my favorite things in this entire series, and one of my favorite things is the moment in the end of Rocky where he's calling Adrian, and when she finally gets over, He doesn't, like, proclaim something crazy or whatnot. His first thing that he says to Adrian is, hey, where's your hat? Because her hat fell off while she was running to him. And it's, like, it's such a, like, a nothing question. But it's, like, that's a, it's just weirdly endearing. It's just, that just defines his character.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and that's the mark of a successful sports movie where, first of all, it doesn't matter whether they win or lose the game, the match, whatever, mm-hmm. because the narrative is, you know, the arc is more important than that. In fact, most of my favorite sports movies are ones where they lose.
Yeah, Little Big League.
Little Big League, Tin Cup, Aquila and the Bee. Yes, I'm counting that.
Oh, Aquila and the Bee is terrific. That's a great movie.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Although, technically, they don't lose. It's yeah, whatever. Yeah. I'm not going to give it away if somebody's even seen it. But, and yeah, the end of Rocky VI, I mean, Rocky Balboa. I was far more into that by the end than I was expecting to be.
Right, when I watched Rocky Balboa in theaters, which, similar to you, Scott, I did see it, like, randomly. I was just thinking, all right, let's check this out. Let's see if it works.
Yeah.
That I was so caught up in the drama of that movie.
Yeah.
And, yeah, by the end, like, I love the speeches that were going on, but it was in the credits where it got me. And I was kind of waiting to see if, like, this movie was going to get me in the same way some of the other Rocky movies do in terms of, like, I'm getting really emotional about it. But it's, like, watching the credits and watching everyone on the steps, like, jumping up and down and doing their thing. It's like, yeah, this is so sweet because everyone likes this character.
Yeah.
Like, it's impossible not to like the character of Rocky, which is something I like about Balboa is when he's just on the street, when he's, like, talking to his son in random places, people come up to him and say, hey, Rock, or whatnot. And it feels very natural. Like, I know they're, like, extras being, you know, just told, like, hey, ask for his autograph, that kind of thing. But, like, it feels like that's the way you would do something like that. Like, if this was a real-life boxer who just happened to appear in public life, people would be like, hey, Rocky, and whatnot, and want to get, like, a picture with him or whatnot. Like,
well, I think it's interesting that so, you know, so many of our iconic cinematic characters are either action heroes or people that do violence or, to a certain extent, you know, bitter anti-heroes or, you know, the Corleones or, you know, Travis Bickles of the world. We have a character like Rocky that, yeah, he boxes, but he's just a nice guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a violent man. He's not a dark, he doesn't have a dark side. You know, if anything, it's obviously, you know, Captain America is a good example because he's a soldier, but he's a character who is, it's his decency and his goodness that makes him exciting.
That's largely why I like the character Captain America, by the way, too. I think Chris Evans does a terrific job of pulling off that earnestness in the right way.
Yeah, and, you know, it drives me nuts, slight digression, when you hear all these people, filmmakers, bloggers, like, oh, you know, you need to make these heroes dark and gritty or complicated so they're relatable. Like, no. You don't need to make Superman complicated or conflicted or torn. You need to find a way to make his goodness exciting. And that's what, you know, it's a miracle, all things considered, what Marvel has done with Captain America, where he is intoxicatingly good. And I think to a certain extent, that's the appeal of the Rocky character.
For sure. I mean, I got to be like, it's fun to watch the fights, I'm sure, but, like, it's the endearing nature of Sylvester Stallone's character and his relationship with Adrian, and I'd imagine Polly, that, like, those are things that make you want to see this character, I think.
He comes from a bad position, but he's a good person. Like, yeah. I mean, he's doing the little underground fights and then amateur fights, but he's also, like, you know, collecting money for a mob boss. But I mean, he's doing work that's bad, but that's the work he can get. He's not educated. He can't read, and you know that. But he's always nice about when he's going to get it.
Do they have, and again, I haven't seen Rocky V in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. Do they ever explain why he can't just, like, do commercials or do, you know, sports side ring announcing? I know in the second film he can't read, but I'm pretty sure he learns, and, you know, he learns during part two. And as you said, in 3 and 4, he's a much smarter, more articulate person.
5 doesn't really get, I just watched it recently, so I'm pretty up to speed on it. I mean, Polly does ask him, why can't you do commercials? He just kind of flat out says no. That's really it.
Five, you have to run with what they give you at the beginning. Like, yeah, they, you know, we lost our house while we were in Russia. And
our son magically aged.
Yeah,
it's like a time warp. So it's been 7 years, but really 7 weeks.
So they flew through the Bermuda Triangle. That's what it is. That's what happened. Yeah. But yeah, no, it is. There's really, they just try not. They just don't. They just talk around it, really.
We just want to get back to Philly.
Yeah.
And I guess that's part of the issue with me is that, again, you know, you have the core dilemma of Rocky and trying to get back on his feet when the solution presents itself that he just doesn't take it. But frankly, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but that's one of my minor nitpicks with Spider-Man 2, is that, you know, I see the solutions to all of Peter's problems standing in front of him, that he just doesn't go into those doors. He doesn't move in with Aunt May or Aunt May move in with him. He doesn't, you know, accept Harry's help. He doesn't just do his homework and be Spider-Man a little bit less. But anyway.
Oh, he's trying to be a superhero. It's hard to just stop saving people. There's a call to order on that one.
When's the last time you were able to shoot webs from your wrist, Scott?
when that ability suddenly being taken away from you, I mean, that's a lot of power to be not having anymore. It's a complicated...
A thought of people around you being hurt if you have them close.
It's a complicated feeling.
Yeah. like raindrop falling on my head.
He does have that scene. It's like, am I not supposed to have what I want? Like, it's a compelling, terrific film.
And I would say yes. Take what you want. Do it. You'll be a happier and better. And that's eventually what happens at the end of the movie, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, it frustrates me. Yes, I get that it's his arc, but it's sort of like, okay, you should have figured that, you know, if you weren't an idiot, you would have figured this out in the first 5 minutes.
He's a kid.
So was I.
So that's the last time Rocky will see his house.
Yeah.
Yes.
And his son.
Ow.
Here we go. Snowy Canada.
Boom, 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 boom. Are we in Burning Heart territory here?
We're getting some great music, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I wish the subs were on the music, too, but...
They're on mine. Montage.
Oh, then why aren't you singing along?
I was listening to you be wrong about Spider-Man 2. This is the Bridge of Spies scene right here.
Yes.
Okay. Spielberg took from Rocky IV, I assume. So you guys like Pauly as a character? You like him? Like Burt Young?
He's like the worst thing to happen to their family, but we love him.
I do like that. I mean, we haven't mentioned Duke at all because he's not really much of a character.
He's in every movie.
He is. He and Stallone and Burgess.
He's barely in Rocky V, but he's there.
He's there, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Burton, Duke.
Yeah. I love him in Balboa when he's like, him describing like what Rocky like has going for him, which is basically nothing. It's like, speed, you don't have it. So we're going to have to use nothing but sheer force.
Yeah, no, that's a great scene. Made for good trailer stuff, too.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, Pauly, he's... Oh, man.
Well, I think... And Randy mentioned this to me, so you know, if he was here, he could confirm it. But I think in the novelization of the original Rocky, Pauly was actually sexually abusing Adrian.
Yeah, I've read that. That's the way they take him, it kind of...
I mean, it's certainly not apparent in the movie, unless you're looking for it.
But Stallone's Rocky, it was a lot darker in general. Like, there was he gives up in that fight because he just doesn't want to be involved in the system, basically. Yeah. There's more depressing stuff involving Adrian in her life. Like, it's a rougher film, but he goes for a much lighter approach.
You know, we talk about Rocky and Pauly, but Adrian's a great character, too. I mean...
As far as her arc goes, for sure. Yeah. I mean, she goes from frumpy clerk at a pet store to someone that knows what's best for Rocky and how he should be conducting his life. Mm-hmm. And is outspoken about it. She doesn't take things lying down.
Yeah, Pauly's, I mean, pretty much Pauly every film, but, I mean, Adrian grows as much as Rocky does through all these. And it sucks that she's not around in Rocky Balboa. But
well, he said he desperately tried to write versions of it where she was alive, and just the story didn't work. And, you know, women in refrigerators aside, he's right. You know, that story, he needs to not have anything to come home to.
It's so much more dramatically compelling.
Yeah.
And it starts you off, right? I mean, Scott, I know you call it, it's a lot of callbacks to like the first film, the first films in the first 20 minutes, but the opening of that film where he just kind of wakes up alone. Just a picture of her on the nightstand. It's very sad, like, because you get it right away. It's like, this is where Rocky is now.
And the interesting thing about Rocky Balboa is you could argue, you know, obviously there are very few flashbacks to the previous sequels, but you could certainly make the case that it's basically just a sequel to two.
You
know, the first two films happened. He became champion of the world period, you know, for a time. He retired, and then the rest of his life just went on like a normal blue collar existence.
Well, you talk about how you watch Rocky IV first, and you were just intensely drawn to it. I mean,
yeah.
They do, for the most part, kind of work as standalone films. I mean,
yeah.
The recaps aside, I mean, the stories they tell are pretty open and shut. I mean, obviously there's things that led into why this film exists, like Rocky II, obviously, or Rocky V with the brain damage stuff, but they do work on, you can pop in any of these Rocky movies and be kind of satisfied. Rocky
yeah, they are relatively, yeah. And again, that's just, you know, that's the way that franchises used to be, where even in a relatively continuity-rich series like this, you still had a standalone story with the beginning, middle, and end.
Well, they weren't thinking about what's next. Or it's like, yeah. Okay, let's just make the best movie we can. Okay, they want another one. Where do we go? Make your movie first. Worry about sequels if it's demanded. Like that.
And it's funny. I remember when The Dark Knight came out, I was one of those that complained that, you know, Two-Face got short shrifted. But in retrospect, that was the right call. You know, that there was no need to save that character for, you know, let's wait till the third film to really flesh that out. No, this is the movie. This is the story you're telling. Finish it here. Worry about the third one later.
So that's because we were used to a different thing. We were like, oh, Two-Face, exactly. that's a villain that gets his own movie,
exactly.
Rather than him being the centerpiece of the Joker's ultimate plot and being the, you know, the full plan.
Not to get too sidetracked, but Harvey Dent, I've said before, like Gordon, Harvey Dent, and Harvey Dent are like my favorite Batman characters aside from Batman. So like watching The Dark Knight, one of the reasons why I just immediately loved it immensely and like just praised it to hell is because Harvey Dent he's the center of that movie. And
yes.
So by the end of that film, when I got to the Two-Face stuff, I felt fine because I'm like, this is such a compelling arc for the Harvey Dent character that the Two-Face stuff in this realistic world, like I don't need to see him as a recurring villain. I like that I've gotten an open and shut case of what this character was and where the arc turned for him.
Yeah, and it's impressive with just one movie that they did that with him. I always felt like Batman Begins, I felt the Rachel Dawes character was a missed opportunity to have a Harvey Dent instead of Rachel Dawes.
Uh-huh.
But there'd be zero female presence in that movie if it wasn't for that. But it was pretty impressive. It was very impressive. They introduced him and did as well as they did with The Dark Knight just being in that movie. And, you know, Eckhart's terrific there. When he got cast, everybody wanted to leave Schreiber. But when Eckhart got cast, it's like, oh, yeah, that's something you can't get angry about. He makes sense.
Oh. Well, Liev Schreiber, I was in the Liev Schreiber camp. But in retrospect, you would have expected him to go dark from, you know, moment one.
Yeah.
Because Liev Schreiber is not a very happy performer.
Yeah.
It would be like casting, you know, Kyle Gallner. Like, this isn't gonna go well.
It'd be like casting Christoph Waltz as a Bond villain.
Yeah, exactly. which also did not go well. But
comes a lot of rock, here, a lot of working out now.
And another music video scene. We're gonna go with the Hearts on Fire.
Yes, Hearts on
Fire, strong desire.
We get a bearded Stallone too,
yes.
Don't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Which is
for like
rarity.
One scene.
Are these movies like the pinnacle of montage filmmaking?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, is there a series that does montage filmmaking
it's
better?
Stallone.
Than
it's Stallone in general. I mean, Cobra's got him too.
When people, you know, make fun of the montage and they make fun of the Rocky movies because of the montage, this is the movie they're talking about.
Right,
yes.
Yeah.
Rocky III.
It's a montage.
Too. Yeah.
It's the most montage heavy, that's for sure. But, I mean, Bill Conti's score accompanying montage, that's pretty standard for every Rocky movie. But, yeah, I know what you mean. This movie is the pinnacle of Rocky. All of this stuff with both of them in the snow, chopping wood, all kinds of pull-ups. Bearded Stallone, like you mentioned, him on the top of a mountain, all of that. A lot of sweat. This is the pinnacle of 80s, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
This
is one of the most 80s movies there is.
Oh, yeah.
If there was a top 10 of like most 80s movies, Rocky IV has a high spot in there.
What else is in there? Like Breakin' 2?
Oh, yeah.
As much as I don't like it, probably Goonies.
I know.
I can't wait for our Goonies commentary.
It'd be 95 minutes of this movie sucks. Let's watch
95. That's 2 hours.
It's 2 hours.
Oh God,
2 hours.
It'll be 2 hours of to hell with this. Let's watch Monster Squad.
95 minutes is the time. That's when it starts actually getting to go. Like it starts moving at that point. That's where they're finally in the cave.
And I love Richard Donner so much, but yeah.
Is it Chris Columbus? Did he write that? Yeah.
Chris Columbus, Steven Spielberg, Richard Donner, and the worst parts of all of them come together for the Goonies.
Pretty much.
I'm glad we use this Rocky IV commentary for you guys to bash the Goonies.
Hey, they're both in 85, right?
That is true.
It's a good year.
Actually, it wasn't. I can't think off the top of my head what my favorite movie of 85 would be.
Back to the Future, Fright Night.
Back to the Future, fair enough.
Rambo, The Color Purple, Out of Africa, Cocoon. The Jewel of the Nile, Witness, Goonies.
Jewel of the Nile stinks.
And Spies Like Us. That's just the top 10 highest grossing movies.
Witness is pretty good.
Witness is great. I love Witness. Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Yeah.
Pretty's Honor. I love that movie.
Boy, did I not know what that movie was about when I was 5.
Let's see. Runaway Train. There you go.
Looking
through this list here. American Ninja. There you go. That's a good one.
Better Off Dead.
Better
Day
Off
of the Dead. Fletch.
Brazil.
Brazil. Yeah, Brazil. Return of the Living Dead.
The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Clue.
Yeah.
I agree with you on those bads, by the way. Commando.
Commando, yeah.
Crime Wave, Sam Raimi's second film.
I've actually never seen that.
It's a movie.
Sam Raimi doesn't want you to talk about that film.
Desperately Seeking Susan.
One of the few generally good Madonna movies.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah.
Enemy Mine.
Explorers. That was a poster that I was fascinated by.
Explorers.
A View to a Kill.
Mm.
Ewoks.
Well, don't do that.
Ewoks The Battle of Endor.
Ooh.
Which is not available on any streaming services, by the way. We showed my children Return of the Jedi the other night. And Ethan, who had never seen a Star Wars film, liked it. And he really liked the Ewoks.
Well, yeah.
Which makes sense because he's 4. And, you know, that's okay.
Ghoulies?
The Ghoulies.
Let's see. Invasion USA. Just One.
That's a movie.
Just One of the Guys.
That's a movie.
Lady Hawk.
That's another. Was that another Richard Donner?
It is Richard Donner. You're right. Yeah. Legend is Ridley Scott. There we go.
Yes.
Return to Oz.
Lost in America. That's a great Albert Brooks movie. Let's see, Mad
now
Max.
Now he's got film. Stallone has got his Nighthawk beard.
Yep. Those pull-ups are crazy. Or those push-ups.
All of this workout crap he's doing here.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, explain the obvious. We have the technology versus old school.
Yep.
European
Vacation.
The best one.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2.
You're proving my point here.
Once Bitten, Jim Carrey's first major role. Pale Rider.
That one's not too bad.
Police Academy 2.
That one is.
The Purple Rose of Cairo.
There we go. Yeah.
Reanimator. Real Genius. Rebo Williams, The Adventure Begins.
And it never did.
It ends.
No, it never began. So thus it could not end.
A Room with a View.
That was so ahead of its time in terms of franchise building.
A Room with a View.
No.
I know.
It's like, hey, I hope you like this terrible film because we'll give you what you really want in the sequel that's never going to happen.
Ran, the last Kurosawa film. Santa Claus the Movie with Dudley Moore.
Superman with Santa Claus.
Let's see. St. Elmo's Fire.
That actually holds up pretty well.
The Sure Thing. Brandon, you love The Sure Thing.
Oh, I did like The Sure Thing. I recently had to review that, and it was fun.
Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Michael J. Fox was killing it that year. To Live and Die in L.A., that's an excellent movie.
Oh, yeah.
Love I didn't it. Even like Teen Wolf as a 5-year-old. That did nothing for me.
To Live and Die in L.A., that needs a Scream Factory or a Shout Factory release. I can see that happening.
Yeah, it's got. I mean,
it's
I have
a decent.
I have a, I have, yeah, I have a, have a 2-disc Blu-ray that has a lot of bonus features.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Including the hilarious alternate ending.
Vision Quest.
Oh.
Weird Science.
Crazy for you.
Weird Science, my favorite John Hughes film.
Wait, what movie's Crazy for You for?
Vision Quest. Vision
I did not know that.
Yeah.
She sings it in the movie.
Fair enough.
Young Sherlock. Vision Quest. Young Sherlock Holmes.
I enjoy that film quite a bit.
Meanwhile, we are still montaging.
Yeah, we're still in the montage. Yeah, that's what we're...
The reason we're not talking, by the way, is because they're still montaging.
Yeah, this is not stopped. There's been no plot advancement whatsoever in this movie. Rocky's outran the Russians. That's what
his beard has grown enough to almost have the Nighthawk's dress.
Ironically, this is very much like the Hoth battle level in Star Wars Battlefront. That game just came out. That's why I'm referencing this when I'm playing it. It's fun.
No, it's funny when you're watching this movie. The implication is those guys are like Russian bad guys or something.
Yeah,
but they're what, bodyguards sent to make sure he doesn't get killed?
I guess.
It looks like, oh, Rocky's running. He can't train. He's gonna get hurt by Russians.
The montage has been leading to this. Him reaching the top of a hill, while Dolph Lundgren's heart explodes.
Ow. Gonna run so fast he'll travel through time.
Made it.
I wonder how much of that was real with the whole standing on the mountain stuff.
I'm pretty sure he built that mountain himself.
Probably. If he falls off, this match is canceled. That's why the Russian guys were after him. Make sure he didn't do something stupid like that. Well, he's actually screaming Drago. I never caught that. I figured he was just screaming in general. Drago!
Yeah, I never knew. Until the subtitle that it was Drago. They should have had, like, a cut to Ivan Drago sitting looking
Rocky.
Down and then just looking up.
Oh, yeah.
As he hears it.
My opponent calls out to me.
Okay, here we go.
Here's the big match.
I'll tell you, slight digression before the fight starts. There was a very brief period when I was actually into boxing. Mostly it was during the Mike Tyson era, to be honest.
This is so...
everybody
I would watch Tyson fights on HBO. Not the pay-per-view ones, because those were expensive.
Yeah, you paid, like, so much money to watch a five-second fight.
Yeah, that was the Michael Spinks fight. My uncle, who would watch the fights and pay for them, he was one of those people that fight starts, goes to get a snack, comes back, it's over. But that was the first time he had done that. And, of course, that became sort of a cliche afterwards. But I remember the night Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson.
Yeah, that was huge.
Yep.
Oh my God, it was amazing.
I remember I couldn't play Punch Out anymore. I was like bummed. I was like, are they going to make a Buster Douglas Punch Out now? Mike Tyson.
It was just
they didn't inspire you to try to beat Mike Tyson in Punch Out because he was a dick in that game.
Like, I never got close to beating him. But it reminded me of that because whoever just beat Ronda Rousey last Saturday night. I imagine
thing,
it's going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
Where some nobody who's never going to, And of course, the second thought I had was, okay, what former UFC female champion is, and former opponent of Ronda Rousey is she going to train with and get back into Eye of the Tiger shape?
Yeah. As long as it's done in a montage that I can view on YouTube in some form, I mean,
that seems
to go well. By the way, Rocky IV, highest grossing Rocky movie in the series.
It's still his highest grossing film, period.
Yeah.
Behind Rambo.
That's crazy.
Yeah, the two films from 85 are his highest yield. This one did 127, opened at 19 million in 3 days over its long Thanksgiving Day weekend, back when that was just an unheard of number. And Rambo had pulled in 20 million over a 3-day Friday to Sunday over his Memorial Day weekend, back when that was just, unless you were a Star Wars sequel or Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, those were both two of the highest grossing openings of all time.
Well, they were the perfect perfect time.
Stop, because the robot
Santa Claus
wearing a
robot.
Santa Claus beard. And presumably since Adrian's here, the robot's the one looking after these kids, because there's no one else in that house.
That is true.
The robot's taking care of children.
It was the '80s. They weren't so, you know, you have to worry about neighbors calling the cops on you.
That's where robots were still cool, when it was the '80s. That's what he said. But yes,
yeah, this one did 127. Part three did 125. Part two did 85. Part one did 117. And then part five did 42, which obviously was a huge come down. And then part six did 70.
But yeah, I did not see that. Like, when I was looking at this, like, I didn't realize Rocky IV was that huge of a hit. Like, I knew, like, they're popular movies, but, like, this is the biggest one. Which is,
oh, yeah, it was huge.
A lot of good faith in this series, then, of people seeing these movies.
Yeah.
Although, that said, the come down from 5 and Rocky IV being not well-reviewed, I mean, like, even 3 was pretty well-reviewed at its time. Like, 4...
They were critic-proof by that point.
Yeah, I guess, but 5, I mean, it's, I mean,
I don't think anybody's defending 5.
Well, I think the issue with 5 is that you had given them, basically it would be the equivalent of having The Spy Who Loved Me followed by, quite literally, you know, a faithful adaptation of The Spy Who Came In From the Cold.
Yeah.
But bad. So, it's not a good movie, but hey, these films haven't been good since Rocky 2, but it also doesn't give you what you wanted out of the last couple of Rocky movies, which were basically glorified, you know, fantasy films.
Yeah, I mean, at that point in the 80s, I don't think people wanted a film where it's like, it's Rocky, but he's not going to box.
Yeah.
He's going to coach. And it's like, I mean, now we look for more, like, personal stories, more grounded stuff, like, oh, it's a natural transition. Back then, with the Rocky movie, he better get in the ring. You better give me the same thing you had before, new opponent, some minor little conflict outside of it. That's what I want.
Oh, he did. In the streets.
In the street. Nobody wanted. That didn't count. There was no belt at stake there, you know?
Just leather belts.
Yeah.
I like, Lundgren's like, I mean, he obviously he's in shape, but he's not like that cut. Like, he, I mean, compared to other
he's
kind of
just
build.
Tall.
He's just well, big. He's just the
compared
big.
To Ivan Drago.
I meant Ivan Drago.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I mean, looking at like his body in this movie, he's certainly, you know, obviously he's fit. I mean, this banner is emphasizing his physique more than his own physique does.
Well, I think this was a period before where muscles were less cartoonish. You look at Rocky or Rambo 2, where he's just, you know, pure muscle, but yeah, he's still pretty darn lean.
I look at Rocky 3, where that really is a movie about muscles. Like, watch it between Clubber Lang, Apollo Creed, and Rocky. Like, all those guys are just...
It was more about beefiness than it was being cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why Predator is amazing, because it's a celebration of beefiness. In the midst of doing all these other things that it does.
Well, if you think... I mean, it's crazy. This one, like, you have, you know, Carl Weathers, Sylvester Stallone, and Dolph Lundgren, who are all action heroes.
Why is Carl Weathers not in an Expendables movie?
What's he doing? That is a good question.
Why can't he be on the ground? So why can't he be a paper pusher like in Predator?
I still imagine it's come up at some point.
I've heard that I read that in Rocky Balboa, Carl Weathers really wanted to be in that movie, and Rocky said no. Or Rocky, he's so ubiquitous. Stallone said no for, I think, obvious reasons, but not even, I guess, a flashback or so. I don't know how you quit, because Carl Weathers, he's visibly aged. In a realm where I like to say black don't crack, Carl Weathers cracked a little bit. but he said no, and so because of that, Carl Weathers did not allow Stallone to use any footage involving Apollo Creed in Rocky Balboa.
Well, it's like, that's like Shatner being mad about the new Star Trek movies and not being in. It's like, dude, you died.
Yeah.
Like, that's why you're not in them.
I don't know. Maybe there's some personal beef involving Carl Weathers and Stallone.
Conversely, you know, Steven Seagal, when he was doing Under Siege 2, he originally wanted Gary Busey back. And the producers had to, you know, pull him over to the corner and say, you blew him up in the last movie.
But maybe I didn't.
Because when you can't
like
get Gary Busey, you get Eric Bogosian.
Yeah.
and it's awesome.
And it's a better movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually like it better.
I can't wait to do our Under Siege 2 commentary track.
I would relish that.
I gotta save Katherine Heigl.
When is that ever going to be appropriate?
It's one of Katherine Heigl's best movies, too.
Yes, it is.
Bride of Chucky and Under Siege 2 are definitely in her top.
I will go to bat for 27 Dresses. It's fine for what it is.
I will. I guess take your word for that.
I really like Knocked Up. I would say she's the reason I like Knocked Up, but she's her.
Her and Allison, her and Leslie Mann.
Okay, so we're in the fight now.
Yes. No more montage.
The good stuff about, like, I'm just, the thing you wait for in this fight is him to hit him. Get him to get that one hit in, and then he does. And I think the music, like, cues up at that point, too. Gives you something.
You know, it's funny, I'm noticing here, like, the Rocky and Duke dynamic is kind of like, well, I guess we're all that's left in this cast.
They're veterans.
We should join together.
They're veterans. But well, I like that
your guy's dead, my guy's dead.
I do like that there's a level of respect there where Duke would come over and be like, hey, I know what you're doing. You're a good fighter. And so, I'll be here for you. I know Mick died. God, it's these beatings.
The height dynamic almost makes it look like Mike Tyson's punch out.
Yeah.
And look at the length.
I mean, he almost has to jump to punch
arms. Like, the arm length is just crazy. Yeah. And Rocky only get these little, he has to go deep in and get these little jabs. Oh. Stallone, it's funny in these movies, the way Rocky falls always. If you watch real boxing matches, I don't know. He's always like running when he's falling.
These matches are so over the top when it comes to Rocky having to get down or get up or do something to kind of make a moment out of the fight.
Tell you what's not fun. What's not fun is watching them film these fights.
I'd imagine.
Especially with Stallone directing. It's like 10 seconds, and then he's like, oh, cut. Okay, I want to see it now. Okay, let's do it again. And you got to, and as an extra, I had to be like super excited for like every time. And it just, oof.
But it turned out great.
It turned out great.
And you helped.
I did help.
You were the one that stands up and screams, boo, Rocky, I hope you die in the ring?
No, I was on the Rocky side. Nobody, it was funny because they had to convince people to not cheer for Rocky, to have some fans for Mason, the line, Dixon. Because they'd be like, okay, now we got to cheer for Mason, and it'd be so much lower.
Well, that's kind of his arc in the movie anyway, so it kind of fits.
And it was weird. I was surprised, and they used the Sinatra song for him to come in the ring. I was surprised that I thought it was really weird. I was like, what in the world?
I like the song.
No, it will be interesting to see Creed, because I think it's the first time that he's played Rocky with somebody else who wrote it.
Yes,
and he directed the middle sequels. 2, 3, 4, and 6. And 5, ironically, was John Avildsen coming back.
Weird. Just goes to prove Rocky 1 was all Stallone.
Yeah.
Just like Tombstone was all Kurt Russell. That connects because that, what's the name?
I get that reference.
Because he did First Blood.
Yes.
What's his name?
No, he did Rambo 2.
Rambo 2, sorry.
Which was totally not directed by Stallone.
Yeah.
As was Cobra, totally not directed by Stallone.
George P. Cosmatos, there we go.
Yes.
Got it. There it is. Yeah.
Oh.
You know, it's funny. You'd think that a guy earning a reputation for not directing the films that they're hired to direct would prove them, unable to get another directing job. But whatever. I mean,
he picks him up.
Oh, that's a low blow or a high blow. And now we're just wrestling, as the captions say.
I can tell.
We haven't mentioned Thunderlips yet.
Like two seconds behind us, I can tell, Scott.
Thunderlips?
Yeah,
Thunderlips.
Hulk Hogan's role in...
Yeah.
Yep,
Hulk Hogan, who says he's the villain for Expendables 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
what he says.
Well-liked and not controversial at all, Hulk Hogan.
Well, you got Mel Gibson, the third one. How do you top that?
You get a good actor.
Yeah, maybe Michael Richards will be his henchman.
You get Carl Weathers, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Or Helen Mirren, either way. I'm sure she'd loved it.
Helen
Mirren's all about Fast and Furious. So
yes.
That's
which is why getting her for Expendables would be a coup.
It would be. It'd be a sting to the Fast and Furious camp.
Yeah.
It'd be a low blow to Vin Diesel and his gang.
But the fascinating thing about Stallone, and you know, we touched on this earlier, there are so many times where I've heard him being interviewed or read an interview with him where he is incredibly intelligent and articulate and thoughtful and says all the right things about the filmmaking process. Mm-hmm. But then, frankly, you know, especially in the quote-unquote dark years, we watch his artistic choices and it's just baffling.
That Planet Hollywood got to my head and I just wanted to make movies of props I could put in my restaurants.
You know, it's a situation where, you know, a movie like Driven sounds so much better, you know, when he talks about
Oh, yeah, they were selling that movie hard. Like, oh, and yeah. Stallone's back!
Well, to be fair, it was supposed to be about 3 hours long and it was supposed to be sort of the racing equivalent of Any Given Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd want to watch that.
Rennie Harlan, Oliver Stone, yeah. Same piece.
But instead it was the Blown Away of summer of 2001.
Blown Away, wow.
Well, you know, while Fast and Furious was speed. By that I mean, yeah. Driven was the, okay, anyway.
It was the weaker of the two, yeah, I get it.
Well, it was the one that everybody thought was going to be a big deal.
And yeah, right. I see what you're saying.
But having said that, you know, as an actor, I mean, I know it's, you know, yeah, he's been bad in some stuff that he shouldn't have been doing, like Rhinestones.
Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. But
Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
I mean, he's good in all the Rocky movies. He's good in all the Rambo movies, frankly. Especially First Blood, but he's fine in the sequels. You know, he is... You know, he has a certain safe zone, as frankly most actors do. I wouldn't want to see Harrison Ford play Hamlet. But when he's in that safe zone, he is a very good, charismatic actor.
To be or not to be, that's the question.
And I know, honestly, the one bad performance is in Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Just because...
But he looks like he's having fun.
Oh, yeah. He's absolutely having a blast.
I think there's there's tone in there that I can allow for. I think
I don't think he was directed at all. I think Robert Rodriguez was so in awe of having Stallone in his movie that he said, you know, go play, come back before dark.
You know, it's actually neat to, like, Rodriguez doesn't act, but those two are very similar in terms of the way they've handled kind of the studio system to a point.
Yeah.
As far as kind of having personal projects that they love doing and balancing going back and forth between things. Which is why I think he just had like an interview with him, I believe, for his channel, whatever this channel's called.
El Rey?
Oh, his El Rey channel, yeah. I mean, I don't know Stallone's directed video stuff, so I can't grade the acting in those movies, but
I see you.
They're okay. You know, again, they're bad movies. He does what he can.
Over the Top, I think, is one of the worst things I've ever seen, so I don't
know. Yeah, yeah. That's
it's hilarious. Good. Oh.
It is.
Over the Top's funny as hell.
Oh, God.
Well, it tries to... It's sort of his Studio 60.
Yeah.
And then it... You know, yeah. And then, you know, I'm sorry, this doesn't work for arm wrestling.
That's one of the films that took down Canon Films.
Yeah.
They overpaid the hell out of Stallone for that. That and Masters of the Universe and... what was the other one? There's three movies that took down Canon Films, and that was one of them.
I can agree that he's not, like, I do think he gets a bad rap, because he gets, like, all these Razzie nominations all the time. It's like, Stallone's not, like, doing bad stuff here. He's doing what's required of him. I mean, there's some really bad, like, Lock Up. There's some really bad movies he's done. Like, Lock Up, by the way, Jesus.
Tango and Cash.
Tango and Cash, which seems like a can't-lose idea, and somehow they lost both.
Well, they spend half the movie in a prison, which is no fun.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Two cops. Oh, go to prison.
I like this. This is like why I'm like, yeah, Drago's like, he's just doing yeah. He's following orders.
He is doing the best he can to bring honor to a corrupt system.
Yeah.
Tango and Cash was actually, prior to Cliffhanger, that was his biggest non-Rocky Rambo hit.
That's not surprising. You got him and Kurt Russell together in a big action. I assume that's a summer action movie.
No, it was December.
Oh, it was December. Oh,
yeah, it came out on Christmas.
Basically
closed,
the same.
Closed out the 80s.
There you go. Why not?
Yeah. I watched Cliffhanger maybe not too long ago. That held up pretty well for
that's
me.
That's a solid movie.
That's really good. Well, Rennie Harlan had a great run.
He really did.
Yeah.
And I like Cutthroat Island. I do too.
No, I go back to that and Long Kiss Goodnight.
Long Kiss Goodnight, I think, is terrific. Cutthroat Island, I think, is too long. That's my main problem with Cutthroat
Island. It is a bit long.
If it was like 10, 20 minutes shorter, I probably could deal with that movie a bit more. And Frank Langella has little arms, but that's a different thing.
He has what?
He has little arms.
Oh, fair enough.
I watch him as like this badass pirate. It's like, you have tiny arms. Like, you're not running no ship. Look at these. This is like... They describe, like, in 5 in Balboa, they talk about how Rocky waged wars in the ring. And these fights really do make you feel that way, of just, like, the kind of punishment that he and his opponents take as they go 15 rounds together. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's a testament to Rocky Balboa that they watch, you know, one thing they bring, the element they bring to the table in his fight is, you go back to all these movies, like, he can take a beating. Better than anyone else. He may not be the best puncher or anything like that. He had the southpaw. That was the early thing. But one thing they realized out of it is like, yeah, dude can take a beating. That's one of his strengths. He can just sit and take it.
Oh, my God. Just doing this commentary, watching this fight with, like, muted. It's getting to me.
Well, I mean, it's these films always were known for their really great climactic fight scenes.
Yeah. Where nobody blocks.
Yeah, exactly.
And where you have more punches thrown in the first round than in any normal boxing match for the entire match.
Yeah, this one thing as a kid, you go from Rocky and you're like, I'm going to watch real boxing, and it's two guys just dancing around and then hugging each other.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, the heavyweight championship. And it's like, that's the worst. God, because there's two guys hugging each other. And maybe a punch gets thrown by the fifth round.
There it is.
Well, what I like about this fight, and yes, obviously there's a dramatic use for having Drago beat the crap out of him early on, but the way this is formatted, they both, aside from nationalistic pride, they both fight with honor.
Oh, yeah.
They both win, so to speak. You know, it's not like Rocky shows up to this Russian fighter and, America's better. He just beats the living crap out of him. You know, it's not quite the Apollo Creed fight in Rocky 2, which I love. Yes. I love that they both basically lose.
I mean, for what it's worth, Rocky just slipped. Like, he didn't get knocked down. Like, it's like he won that fight. Like, Creed's trying to make a big deal as if, like, he also punched Rocky. He's like, dude, you fell down because you got knocked down.
Yeah.
Rocky fell down because he knocked you down.
It's
a little disconcerting that the canon history is that Drago killed himself when he did bring a level of honor to his country, but well, whatever. Oh, here's the speech.
Yes. Speech.
A lot of lens flare in this movie.
Change.
A lot of lens flare in here. I'm sure J.J. Abrams picked this up from Rocky IV, too.
Yep.
He's hugely influential. This is a very Rocky speech. Like, as silly as it is, this does seem like something Rocky would say.
It's not brilliant, but, I mean, it's character.
Because it's not terribly articulate, it sounds like something, it's... And I gotta say, especially if you're somebody who is intelligent, and Stallone is... It's got to be the hardest thing to write a speech, to write dialogue for people that aren't terribly articulate or eloquent. Because as a screenwriter, I mean, I didn't do it much. It was just sort of for film school and for my own amusement. But I wanted to write clever dialogue. I wanted to write quippy, smart, thoughtful, sort of mammoth Tarantino-esque dialogue. But there's something to be said for writing stuff that just sounds the way people talk.
Right.
And I think that's an undervalued asset.
It helps he's also big on improvisation.
Yeah.
A lot of those kind of him in the street scenes are scenes of improvisation between him and the actors. But yes, I completely agree, Scott. I mean, it takes talent to write regardless. Regardless of if it's, smart dialogue or quote-unquote dumb dialogue, it takes a level of talent to make that play naturally. To the degree of what the film's trying to do. If it's a Tarantino film that's obviously stylized in many ways, or if it's a film like this, where you have some guy on the, like, or the first Rocky, where it's just guy on the street talking to random people.
I'll see you in 7 years. 6 years, whatever.
Four.
Man, 1, 2, 3. They were 5 years apart, but it was seven years. The kid had aged like 7 years.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's in high school.
So it's at the time vortex in this film. It's just, something like Millennium, the other Millennium, the movie Millennium, which I think you're going to watch soon, aren't you, Brandon?
Millennium?
I think I saw a thing on your Facebook thing about you getting that Blu-ray.
Oh.
The airplane one. Anyway, it's interesting.
Oh, it's a double feature with Shot Factory next year. Yeah.
Yes. That's a movie with a great premise that doesn't do much with it.
First credit, co-starring Stu Nahan as commentator number one. He got billed above Stallone in the end credits.
I like that James Brown credited as
Richard Nielsen got. A lot of people got billed ahead of Dolph Lundgren.
Rocky Jr. played by Rocky Krakoff.
Seiko the Robot, voiced by Robert Dornick. This movie's over, by the way. It flies by. Even though there was 40 minutes of montage.
Yeah, this is a really quick movie. I think as an adult, I come in.
It's the shortest Rocky movie.
When you revisit it as an adult, you're like, oh my gosh, this is over? Because, I mean, Apollo Creed dies, you get two montages, and you're already fighting.
Yeah, pretty much.
Gets to the point.
And it goes from Apollo dying to the funeral to the press conference. He comes home, argues with Adrian, montages, flies to Russia, trains, montages, boom, fight scene.
Which is what you said, Scott. I mean, it's because there's nothing dramatically exciting besides Rocky needs to do this thing. Like, there's nothing else going on in this film. There's no subplots.
No.
There's no, besides, Polly's robot, there's nothing else going on in the movie.
There's not, good movie, bad movie, whatever. There's not an ounce of fat on this thing.
Just like Rocky.
As silly as it is, it's incredibly entertaining.
Yeah, for sure.
I still feel that way. And as I said, it doesn't have the issues that I have with the third film, which are, I would consider the two, Rocky 3 and 4 are the fantasy Rocky movies, in my opinion.
Right.
They're the ones where they're basically, they're blockbusters. They're almost glorified action pictures.
Although Rocky 3 is the most action-heavy of the movies.
Yes.
There's the most fights because it's like a montage of Rocky fighting at the beginning of the movie.
Then you have the wrestling thing.
There's the wrestling thing. There's the first Clubber Lang match. Then the giant montage and the second Clubber Lang match. Like, a lot. There's a lot of action in that movie.
And then the end reveals that Talia was actually Talia al Ghul all along.
Biggest flaw in Rocky Balboa, by the way, is that there's not a dusty robot sitting in the corner of his house somewhere.
Correct.
Or a line from Polly like, I haven't been the same since I had to sell my robot.
Well, we'll see if there's a robot in Creed.
I hope so.
Me too.
I like that these credits, like, they're overlaying it with just still frames from all the Rocky movies, and then it gets to Rocky 5, so it's like, oh, yeah, that just happened. You just kind of sit here, oh, yeah, I watched this. It just reminds me of that scene.
Actually, these credits, I think they're all Rocky 4.
I meant Rocky 4, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
I meant it recaps all the films up to now, and which includes this movie. Which
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Rocky 5 does the same, I believe. It recaps the whole series.
Yeah, Rocky 5, it's like, it was supposed to be the close. It felt like a series closer.
Yeah.
Well, so did 6, frankly.
6.
But I think,
I mean, 6 was supposed to be.
6 really, for all intents and purposes, is. We'll see Creed, but it's not, it's not called Rocky 7 for a reason.
It's 6 was the undiscovered country of the franchise, and 7 will be Generations.
There you go.
We'll see how literal that ends up being, and no, I don't know.
I am. Yeah, I mean, you're
seeing it soon. And they're both the same numbered.
I'm seeing it soon. Brandon, you're seeing it soon, I imagine, as well. Like,
I will be there.
And I'm very excited for it.
Yeah.
I'm hearing great things, which is great. But
I'm hearing Stallone's Best Supporting Oscar nomination.
Yes.
Even.
Which, that's a very potent narrative.
It would be.
It's not like there's anyone that doesn't like him. And I've always said, well, not always, it's been 2 years, that if 42 had come out in October, November, then Harrison Ford would have gotten the Best Supporting Actor nomination. Because he was so good in that and so against type that...
And showy in the way that an Academy would like.
Exactly. As opposed to his usual underacting performances.
Well, that's the end of Rocky IV. And
he's always working around the clock.
Yeah. I'll leave us with one last fact here. Sylvester Stallone's full name is Sylvester Gardenzio Stallone, but besides that...
can call him Sly.
You can call him Sly, yeah. That's going to do it for our commentary episode of Rocky IV, which flew by and was a ton of fun to talk about.
My heart's on fire.
Strong desire.
There you go. So with all that said, Brandon Peters, where can people find more of your work online?
Cult Cinema Cavalcade. CultCinemaCavalcade.com, at CC Cavalcade. You can email us mail at cultcinemacavalcade.com. Follow me on Twitter at BT Peters.
Scott Mendelson.
Forbes. Forbes.com. My official blog is called The Ticket Booth. You can Google Ticket Booth, Scott Mendelson, Forbes, some combination thereof.
You can find me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4, and you can follow my my Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCodeIsZeke, where you can see all the links to everything that I do. You can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes, on Audio Boom, and at Stitcher. You can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on the Rocky films. Feel free to follow our pages on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/outnowpodcast and twitter.com/outnow_podcast. Pretty much every way you can find a podcast, you can find our show. Thank you, anyone that's listened this whole way. Hope you guys enjoyed what you were listening to. I hope if you did watch the film and listen to our commentary at the same time, kudos, because that's always fun to do, and it does work. I've tried it out several times with some of these past ones just to revisit them. But yeah, Scott, Brandon, thank you both for joining me for this.
Oh, thank you, as always.
You're very welcome.
And yeah, until next month's commentary track, that's going to do it for this week's episode.
Star Wars Holiday Special.
Exactly. I hope we can find
it.
But until next time, so long and goodbye.